You learn so much.
This new, I'm into the new stuff. Pesach, with Rav Belsky. Rav Belsky. I learned by Rav Belsky for a short time in Tarvei Das. I did it here, Pesach Techulin, and then I had a private, personal relationship with him. Not that elaborate, but I had a very nice relationship with him. And the Mechaber, the one who put together the Sefer, as I told you a few times, is his Talmud, David Abramowitz. I knew David Abramowitz. I knew him. I was very, very. He's my age. I was with him for a while. We got married. I know he married by Wagner's daughter. Remember Wagner from
Queens?
Forest Hills. Yeah. He passed away. He was a very chashuv rav. Wagner. He was a very, very chashuv rav. And he married.
Israel now, right?
He passed away. Right? Wagner passed away. Very tragically. Him and his wife. They both passed away. Like very young, suddenly, I don't know, it was very, very tragic. And his daughter, I think there was one daughter that was not married, and she married my friend, Rav David Abramowitz. And I didn't know in the Hagdama, I didn't know all this information about how long this Haggadah was in preparation. This Haggadah sounds like it was in preparation for 20 years. Rabbi Belsky himself edited a lot of this, a lot of part of the Haggadah. It seems that for some reason it's been percolating for many, many, many years until finally he put it out. And a lot of it is based on shiurim that he gave over the years in Tarvei Das. Right. And he would repeat himself, whatever. They refined it, took a very, very long time. And there's a lot of novel ideas. This is not just rehashing.
Art scroll
published this because Melman. You know, it's all who you know, what you know. Okay, it's you know, whatever. It is what it is. In any event, it's a very novel. There are a lot of things here that are, again, it's not a rehashing of the same thing again and again and again and again. There are a lot of unique ideas. And there are actually some things that I remember from Rabbi Belsky himself. And I didn't finish the whole thing, but let me share with you quickly, a couple of ideas which drew my attention. First, let me do three halachic inyanim, which are famous. These are very famous things from Rabbi Belsky, his tradition in halacha. Number one is yachetz. Once I mentioned this to you, I said this a little a few times, but the way he writes it here is different than the way I'm used to saying it over. He has a little bit of a different twist. And that is, if you look in any standard Haggadah, I don't have Haggadah here in front of me, it doesn't matter. You go home, you look in the Haggadah, you can almost be guaranteed all the Haggadahs have the simonim. Kadesh, Urchatz, Karpas, Yachatz, Magid, Rochza, Mosimatza. You go through the Haggadah, there are simonim. And every single new Haggadah today, before you begin the next section of the Haggadah, it presents the siman in the Haggadah. Before you say Kaddish, it says Kaddish. Kaddish, Kaddish. Before you get to the part of the Haggadah where you eat the Moror, it says in the Haggadah, Moror. When it comes to Hallel, it says the word Hallel. When it comes to Nirtza, it says Nirtza. I think Dr. Friedman, you once showed me you have some Haggadahs that don't have, some old Haggadahs that maybe do not have the simonim. I believe can you say that if you look at the old Haggadahs, you will see that they do not have the simonim printed in the Haggadah before each section. It is clear. They just have the text, the brachas, the nusach. They did not embellish the Haggadah by injecting into the Haggadah the 15 simonim. Along came the 20th century, maybe even before that. For some reason, the printers got excited and they decided they want to embellish the Haggadah by putting the simonim in the Haggadah. And they decided, it was on type, Magid, where are you going to put Magid? Is that right? Right before Ha Lachma Anya. Right before the words Ha Lachma Anya, this is where This is where you put the word Magid. So Rabbi Belsky says, now the truth is that later I found this much more written up. I think I saw this in the Masifta Haggadah. It's a very also like an encyclopedia Haggadah, which has everything you can imagine, at least all the old things, not going to all the classic ideas. And he actually shows that it's a machloikis. It's machloikis in halacha. But Rabelsky held very, very strongly, holach ma'anya is not a chelek of magid. Holach ma'anya is a chelek of yachts. Yachts. And therefore, all of the haggadahs that have been printed in the 21st century, and certainly the 21st century, have all made a mistake. There's a toss. There is an error. There is an error in all of the haggadahs. Magid comes before the Manishtan. Okay, and in fact, he brings Rais, Zarabelsky, that's the way it's supposed to be. Magid.
Why can't it
be? Who says it doesn't say?
Halach ma'anya.
Why
can't Magid start with halach ma'anya?
I'll explain in 1 second. Baruch, yeah.
I'd rather say it before.
Before you came in. No. We're saying that in all of the old, Rabbi Belsky claimed, in all of the old haggadahs, they did not have the simonim printed in the haggadah at all. This that today we have in the haggadahs, the simonim, the 15th simonim printed in the haggadah, it's a new thing. The printers in the 20th century, I don't know, maybe Dr. Friedman is looking through some old haggadahs, maybe you'll find it, but he held the old haggadahs never ever had anything printed telling you where the simon is.
Each
section. It's a new thing. The printers decided to go and to inject the simonim into the Haggadah, and some say you're supposed to say it before you begin each section. Taka, someone is supposed to say Kadesh, Orchat, it's supposed to actually say it. But it was not presented. So the printers decided that Holach Ma'anya is part of Magid. So they print Magid in the Haggadah, and then
that's
99% of the Haggadahs have it like that.
No.
Your Haggadah, what does it have?
Well, first of all,
No,
but that other Haggadahs is before.
No, it's before right. When?
I think the Beis HaLevi also, he makes a rush on the side that it begins with Manishtana.
Look at the Haggadahs. Go home. Hey, Adagos.
Right.
Look at that. Here we have over here in the back wall by the door. Okay. You look in the Haggadahs and you'll see that 99% of the Haggadahs that are printed today, for sure, 21st century for sure, and probably vast majority, almost all, it says the word Magid before Holach Ma'anya. And Rabelsky held, this is a toss. This is a mistake. Now, Mordechai, why is this a mistake, or what's the issue? The issue is what we say about the matzah. What we say about the matzah is poor man's bread, holach manyim, which our forefathers ate the Mitzrayim. That is holach diachola avosana the ar the Mitzrayim kol dichvin yese v'yechol kol dichvin yese
ditzrich
yese v'yivsach hashata hachol lashana ba v'yar the Mitzrayim. First of all, you invite the guest to come before the Seder begins. You don't go invite someone before the Matzah. It's already too late. Number two, Holach Ma'anyos, poor man's bread that our forefathers ate in Egypt, is a contradiction to what it says in the Haggadah. Rabbi Yossi Oimer, Kol Nishlo Yama Shloisha Dvamil Ba'Pesach Lo Yotzi Dechavosa V'Elohein Pesach Matzu Mor Matzu Al Shumo Al Shum Shlo Yehispik Hispik Bitzekom Lahachmitz Atche Higle Aleim Melech Malchim Melech Makadosh Baruch Hu Ga'olam. Matz is not poor man's bread. That's a drasha. In the Haggadah, the matzah is described as a Giluy of the Shechina. Ba'avur Zeh Lo Yamarti El B'Shor Sheish Matzu Mor Munachim Lefanecha. That's not what it says in the Sur, the Nusach. The Nusach of the Haggadah, the Iker Nusach is not Lach Ma'anya. That's an addition which came in much later on. Holach Ma'anya.
The Nusach is together with Moror.
But how do we explain in the Gemara? The Gemara tells us pretty much the Nusach. The Gemara, the Nusach of the Haggadah is Matzah Zu Shonu Oichlon Shomo. Al shum shli hispik bitzekim lahachmitz at shehigle aleim melech malchem lachem akadosh baruch hu golum. It has nothing to do with poor man's bread. What does it mean? Oini? Does it mean poor man's bread?
Right.
It's a drasha. Ayin panim l'toira.
That's the lashon of the chumash.
But the nusach of all this poor man's bread, the achola of asan v'adim mitzrayim, it's a contradiction. This is not what Maggid is all about. You don't go teach your children. Maggid is the father tells the children. The father is not telling the children to be poor. He's not trying to promote poverty. Okay, that's not our point. The point is, Rabbi Belsky held very, very strong that this that the printers have done and have taken the word maggot and thrust it into the page, they put it in the wrong place. They made a mistake. It's amaratzis. Maggot begins with ma nishtano. That's where maggot begins. What then is holach maggot? This is a very big chiddush, and this explains to Rabbi Belsky. Only Rabbi Belsky says this. He says it's not even the people that agree with Rabbi Belsky. That say, you look at some of the old Mepharshim, you look especially in the Masifta Haggadah, they have the Marach on this to a degree, they speak about this, when exactly does Maggid begin? They don't say where Rebelski, Rebelski goes a little bit further, he says a very big chiddush. He says, Holach Ma'anya is the Amira, the words that accompany Yachatz. You ask the average person in the street, how do you do Yachatz? Very easy. You have three matzahs, you take out the middle matzah, you break it into two parts, the bigger portion you put away for later, and the smaller portion you put back. Right, is that what you do? You put away the bigger piece? I'm forgetting already.
Yes.
You put away the bigger piece. You put away the bigger piece, the kids come, they steal the bigger piece, and the smaller piece you put in the middle. That's how you do yachatz. Rabbi Bell's wrong. That's not yachatz. What you said is correct. You take out the middle matzah and you break into two parts. But there are words that accompany the shattering of the middle matzah. You break the middle matzah in front of your family, and as you break it, you declare, "Holach ma'anya, diachola vosana be'aradim mitzrayim." You take the middle matzah and you break it. It's like under the wedding. You break the kais. You break it. And as you break it, you declare, this is the poor man's bread, which our forefathers ate in Egypt. Whoever wants, now that we've broken the bread, now is the only time you can first make the announcement. You couldn't say, you couldn't invite guests to come until you have the matzah. You couldn't do this. Mm-hmm. Before the Seder began, the bread was complete. It's only now when the Seder begins, there's an avoida in breaking the matzah. And when you break the matzah, now we have matzah. Now for the very first time we can make the announcement. Anyone who wants, come and join us. Because now we have a chefetz, the mitzvah, that we can use for the Seder. Now let's go further. Now, this is what I didn't see. He explains a little bit. So that's a very important point. This is a tremendous chiddush of Rabelski. Number one, all of the Haggadahs are wrong. You'll go home, you look at all of your Haggadahs, and probably 99% of them are going to put the word, you have over here Dr. Friedman, is showing me a Haggadah where it says, Holach Ma'anya, and on top it says, Maggid, but wait a minute, that Maggid on top, that's the top of the page. That's not before Ki Holach Ma'anya. Turn the other pages. Do they ever have the simonim on the, he's showing me an image you can't see on the screen. Dr. Friedman, does he have the next simon? Rochza. Let me see how he shows Rochza and Motzi Matzah. He's probably, let's see how he presents Rochza Motzi Matzah. And we have to go see the Haggadah. It could be this Haggadah, this is a Man Haggadah. And what year is this Haggadah printed? This is what he claims. He claims the Holach Ma'anya is Tav Kuf Chof Zayin. Okay, so that's like 150 years ago. No, 250 years ago. Tav Kuf Chof Zayin, that's 250 years ago.
Right.
And it shows over there the word Ma. It shows
1767.
1767. 250, about 250. I was close. Okay. So 250 years ago, and but I have to see, you have to show me again, I have to see how, what it says, because like, it puts Magen on top of the page, but it doesn't necessarily matter. This is what he says. I remember hearing this myself from him. I remember hearing this myself, and he says, it's a mistake. Magid begins with Manishtana, Holach Ma'anya is the Amira that accompanies Yachatz. Now, that's old stuff. I told that to you a long time ago. He says over here a little bit more. But there's still a question. There's a contradiction. There is a contradiction. Because in the Haggadah, we call matzah ad shehigle aleihem melech malche hamlochim makadosh baruch hu ugi olam. It represents the gilu shechina. Nothing to do about poor man's bread. So he says in the Haggadah here that when you call it holach ma'anya, it has nothing to do with chometz. Now, it happens to be that the bread that you're breaking is chametz. Happens to be that it's matzah. But that's not what it means, holach ma'anya, the achol avos, and the ardi mitzrayim. In Egypt, did our ancestors actually eat when they were slaves on the field, working, building peace in the Ramses? Did they eat only matzah? So there's a very well-known Ibn Ezra. He quotes it over here in Rabelsky's Haggadah that says, yes, the Ibn Ezra himself says, I went traveling and I saw my own eyes that the food they feed slaves work on a plantation is matzah. It's cheap, it stays in their stomach, it keeps them full, and it's the ideal food to feed a slave that you couldn't care less about and you're not interested in its benefit. It's cheap for you, it keeps them full, and that's what it's, slave food. Matzah, bedavka matzah and not chometz. So that's a very well-known Ibn Ezra, and therefore many understand that when it says in the Haggadah, holach ma'anya diachola avosan ba'ara dimitzrayim, it's not so much going on that it's a broken piece of bread, it's referring to matzah, and not chometz. Maybe slaves on a plantation, you gave them full pieces of matzah. Who says you gave them a broken piece of matzah? You gave them a full piece of matzah. But the point is, you gave them matzah, because matzah is the perfect slave food. This is what it says in the Ibn Ezra.
Did you see matzah in Mitzrayim?
That's exactly what the Ibn Ezra says. The Ibn Ezra says that it's very likely that when they were in Egypt, they were building peace in the Ramses, they were slaves, they fed them matzah. This is extremely popular. When we look at matzah as being of two different reasons. Number one, when we left Egypt, it was not enough time for the dough to rise. So Mamela, they turned into matzah. Number two.
And thereby associating it with freedom.
Freedom. Because it was no time for freedom. We had to get out of Egypt very quickly. We left. We fled. We had no time. Then there's another reason why we eat matzah. Because matzah is called lechem oni. Oni means many things. One of its translations means poor man's bread. Why is matzah called poor man's bread? Poor man's bread. The ultimate poor man is a slave. A slave is a poor man. And a slave eats matzah. Why matzah? Because matzah is cheap. Matzah.
Minimal ingredients.
Yeah. Minimal ingredients, but bread is also minimal ingredients.
And it's still not necessarily.
It's cheap, and it's also cheap, it does not digest well. So it stays in your stomach. If you were to eat bread, you would have to eat double. Because the bread is processed in your stomach very quickly. Matzah is not digested very quickly, therefore it sticks around. If it sticks around, you save money. You don't have to feed the slave so much. It's a type of bread that is for poor people, especially slaves.
It doesn't say lechem oni, it says lechem oni.
But Chazal make a drasha, this is a drasha, lechem, you're right? And only Chazal say it means affliction, bread of affliction.
Mm-hmm.
You feed it to a slave is a person who is afflicted, who is tortured. And then the Chazal also say, like you said, it means bread, which only means you speak.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about it. In any event, getting back, we have over here We have over here matzah. Matzah, we say, ahol lachma anya, this is the poor man's bread, the ahol avos, son of the Yardim Mitzrayim, the Ibn Ezra, which has captured the day, which has become part of our psyche. Matzah, when you say those words, you're referring to the fact that it is matzah in contrast to chometz. That is the way probably every single person, when they say those words, that's how they think. We have here on the table matzah, and we don't have on the table chometz. Correct? Isn't that the way everyone thinks about this? When you translate the words in that fashion, then you have a contradiction. Now, we have a contradiction to what we say later in the Haggadah, Rabbi Yossi Aglili Oimer, Kol Mishloi Omar Shloi Shadamir Lohes Kolois Lechavos, Avelo Gein Pesach Matzah Mar Matzah, Al Shom Shloi Hispik B'tzekim Lahachem. It's a contradiction. Okay, Ayin Panim L'Toyra, duality, many different interpretations, Hayaluchot V'Hayaluchot. Rabbi Belsky Zechet Tzadik Levracha disagrees. He says, as we said, number one, Yachat is not Magid. Take a magic marker, take it out of the Yahagadah, the word Magid begins before the Manashtana. Kan Habein Shoyal. Here is where the children ask the question. Kan. No, it's not for nothing that there, many Haggadahs it says, Kan Habein Shoyal. And what is Magid? Magid is to tell your children. To tell your children. The children ask a question and then you give an answer. Magid begins with Kan Habein Shol Manishtana. Yach, the word Solach Manya is the amira, are the words that accompany the act of breaking the matzah into two parts. Okay, that's tremendous chiddush number one. Chiddush number two, when you say Hol Lachma Anya, it has absolutely nothing to do with the fact that it is matzah and not chometz. Rebelsky says, what he says over, who says in Egypt slaves did not eat bread? Who says they didn't bread? Of course they ate bread. They maybe sometimes, what? Yeah. That's Ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra says that slaves ate matzah. No. Slave bread. You go to the supermarket, you go to pomegranate. Where do you have slave bread? Try that. Go today. Go to pomegranate today and say, where do you have your slave bread?
65,000.
We only cater to the rich. We don't cater to the poor.
Called the army. They call it
Jew bread. Jew bread. Jew bread. Oh, you see, unbelievable. Wow, it's pretty scary. Where do you have matzah? Matzah is so that's the Ibn Ezra. That's Ibn Ezra. Belsky says, guess what? Not everyone holds of the Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra has some way out chidushim. Ibn Ezra has the most extreme chidushim. All the Rishonim, Ibn Ezra is always behind these things you never heard before. You never heard these things. The Sefer Oitzeh Polois, half of the things Oitzeh Polois are all Ibn Ezra's. Things you never ever heard before. I saw Rav Chaim Kinyas, the Israel Chaim Kinyas, they told him, they mentioned him, they said Ibn Ezra, so he says, listen, don't ask me a kasha from the Ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra's Kodesh Kadoshim, but the Ibn Ezra says things that are totally, totally not mainstream. That's a fact. But, you know, Ibn Ezra, again, he's on the page. I'm not a, who's on the page of Mikros Kedolos? The Ibn Ezra's Kodesh Kedoshim. And he quotes, this idea, for some reason, has captured the hearts and minds of the whole Klal Yisrael, that matzah, and not bread, not chametz, is the exclusive domain of a slave. You show me another Rishon that says that? Try to find other Rishonim that say what the Ibn Ezra says. Rabelsky says the mainstream is slaves ate chametz. They ate chametz like everyone else. So what then does it mean? What then does it mean when you say cholach ma'anyad yachol avos and yard mitzrayim? It means you never gave a slave a full loaf of bread. Slaves were given broken pieces of chametz. Go to a wedding. Wash, you take a little nibble, and they throw it in the garbage. So you go to the garbage, you take out that loaf of bread, that's a broken piece of bread, that someone ate half the bread from the garbage. Oh, we found over here a half a loaf of bread, a challah bulkla from the end of Shalosh Shuris. You go to shul, half the bulkas are there, half eaten. Oh, chop all the half eaten bulkloch and go give them to the slaves. So when it says holach ma'anyad yachol avosan b'yarid mitzrayim, you were not referring to the fact that it's matzah. That's later in the Haggadah. Later in the Haggadah, we're going to learn about the nature, the texture of the bread, that the bread happens to be matzah. Al shum shlo yihispik mitzekam lachmitz. This idea that it was slave bread, that's not the Haggadah. You want to say drush? Very nice. No one's coming to hold you back from saying very nice drush. But as far as what does it mean, the focus of the Haggadah Shlo Yihispiku Bitzekam Lahachmitz, the bread did not have enough time to turn to chametz until HaKadosh Baruch Hu revealed himself. There was Gilui Shechina. That's what it says in the Haggadah about the matzah. That's the theme of matzah. When it says, it's focusing the fact that it's a broken piece of bread. It's not a sholem. It's a perusa. The Gro holds how many matzahs do you have? Two. Why? Because he holds this is a din of the Seder. It has to be a broken piece of bread. The din that it's lechem oni, according to Rybelski, has nothing to do with matzah. It has to do with broken piece of bread. It happens to be that on Pesach you're not allowed to eat chametz, so the broken piece of bread is matzah. But the din is a broken. The beginning of the Seder, and there's a critical din of a slave. Avadim hayinu lefaro b'mitzrayim. We were slaves. And slaves, they gave us the leftover bulkalach from Shalosh Shuris. And it was chometz. It wasn't matzah. We're not up to matzah yet. It's Pesach, so I knew everything's going to be kosher l'Pesach. And now we begin the Seder. You come to the Seder. Oh, we're coming to the Seder now. What do we got on the table over here? We have over here full loaves of bread? We got a full loaves of bread over there? No. That's not the Seder. We have to have lechem oni, poor man's bread. Poor man's bread means one thing only, that it's not complete. Nothing to do, zero to do with its chametz u'matzah. And therefore, to start the Seder, what are we going to do? We're going to break it. We're going to make it. We're going to create a cheftza, an object of a poor man's bread.
That's why Rabbi Alpert says it's, let's say, the reason you do yachatz is it's a zecher to Tisha B'Av.
A zecher to Tisha B'Av?
That's what he said.
Why? What's the zecher?
I mean, you're breaking the bread. I mean, this is like, just like you have the egg at the Seder, if you want to say it's chagiga, you want to say it's a zecher to Tisha B'Av, it's the night of Pesach. It's going to be the night of Tisha B'Av, the same thing. Yachas at the beginning of the Seder, you're sitting down to this glorious Seder with all the trimmings and everything. You start off just to remember, Halach Ma'anya, you're breaking the bread, and you're breaking it. That's a Zeichet to Tisha B'Av as well. That's what he says.
Very good. Excellent. It's part of the same idea. You're creating a Cheftza of a broken piece, you're creating that broken piece, and that's the lach ma'anyad yachol avosan b'yarid mitzrayim, and then you begin the Haggadah, Magid, kan haben shoyel. Now the child is asking the question. Notice the child is not asking the question about the poor man's bread, the broken piece. It's very interesting. It's very interesting. The child is not asking why it's broken. That's not one of the questions. You know why it's not one of the questions? Because it's probably not uncommon for people in the home. Not everyone's rich. Not everyone in Klal Yisrael is rich to have a whole loaf of bread. Unfortunately, there are many people, Kimcha de Pischa. How come the whole year we eat bread that's complete? Every child can ask that question. The whole year round we eat a bread that's complete? No. Many children come from very poor families. They never saw a whole piece of bread. They never saw such a thing. A whole loaf of bread, they never saw. So the child, that's not a novelty. You can learn from the matzah, from the manishtana.
Today, by the way, they teach the chassidim that a shvarim is considered lechem mishnah. You don't need a whole matzah for lechem mishnah.
Why?
It has such chashivas, a half a piece of matzah. That's the limud. That's
okay.
What they tell him.
Okay.
It's a huge part.
It's interesting, you learn from the manishtana what you don't ask. What you don't ask is also quite a limud.
Right.
They ask four questions, matzah, morer, haseba, and the dipping, but they don't ask why tonight is the bread broken. The whole year round, we always have...
That's the biggest question.
Why don't they ask that question?
They didn't get to that.
They didn't get to that. Or they didn't get to more either. They didn't get to more either. But more at least they see on the table, they see on the car, they see the morer, and they see the chareses, they see the karpas, and they see the salt water. But the wine, you didn't pour four cups of wine. You don't put on the car four cups of wine. You put one cup of wine.
Right.
But why doesn't the child ask? Manish Tan Laila said all of the nights of the year we eat a whole loaf of bread. And tonight we eat a parusa. You know why? Because the whole year round they also eat a parusa. Not everyone in Klal Yisrael is rich. And therefore the father has to show that in Egypt the whole nation, there were no givirim. Everyone was poor, no one had. Okay, so this is the first, I want to tell three different halachic things. This is the halachic thing which I find this Rebelsky is unique. This is a novelty, this whole idea of saying that there's a mistake in all the Haggadahs, and the words are an Amira to Yachatz. And what is the translation of Halach Ma'anya? Halach Ma'anya is not on the din matzah. Halach Ma'anya is a din in the din of the Perusa, not on the fact that it is matzah. Also, I remember from memory. Also, I think that Rabelsky said he tied it into the end of last year's seder. At the end of last year's seder, what did we say? We say l'shana habaha l'Yerushalayim. And now here we are. It's like the beginning of the seder is a continuation of the seder from last year. Like we said, remember last at the end of the seder, what do? We say Chad Gadya. Chad Gadya is in Aramaic. Chad Gadya is in Aramaic. And the reason why we begin the seder with Halach Ma'anya, which is in Aramaic, is to remind us of last year's seder. Last year's seder, the last piyut is Chad Gadya. Oh, didn't we say something in Aramaic last year? Yeah, at the very end. And here we are again this year. What are we still doing here this year? Why haven't we accomplished anything? A whole year has passed, and it's Halach Ma'anya. It's the same old stale bread. A whole year has passed and nothing has changed. So he also said that Halach Ma'anya is a carryover from the previous year as an expression of frustration that nothing has changed in an entire year. Okay, now let me go to another very big chiddush of Rebelsky. I remember him saying this, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe I don't, my mind's playing with me. And that is, what is the percent of Yayin, you have Yayin. What is the lowest percent of alcohol that is considered mechudar? Mm. You're allowed to have in your wine. So he Rebelsky worked for the OU, and besides working for the OU, he was a genius in everything possible, and he had a lot of very fascinating ideas. Let me tell you first what's the run of the mill, and then how he totally disagrees. The average person will tell you, what's this thing about moizgin es hakoyis? We begin to say there with moizgin es hakoyis. Someone pours your wine. And that's not, they have a bottle of wine. Before Pesach begins, you select what kind of wine you want to use. You want to use a strong wine, 12 ounces, 13 ounces, 12%, 13%, 5%, 3%, kal, white wine, red wine, sweet, dry. Okay, you want to use grape juice. And then moizgin es hakoyis. You don't pour the cup. Somebody should pour the cup. Someone should pour the cup for you. Moizgin es hakoyis. Someone pours the cup. So that's not really what it means. Moizgin es hakoyis means someone dilutes the cup. Time chazal, wine, real natural wine was how do you say it in English? You were not able to drink it. It was. It could not be ingested. It was
too strong.
Too strong. If you take, you go to the vineyard, you squeeze the grapes,
yeah,
you let the wine ferment.
Concentrate.
It was concentrated. It was impossible. There was a blessing in the earth. The earth was potent. It was not yet depleted of its minerals like we have done to this earth. The earth was potent, and the wine was so, so strong. It was literally impossible to drink. Ad kedei kach, if someone drinks raw wine, it is a shaila if he's yoytze the mitzvah. Halacha l'maaseh, you're yoytze, but you're not mekayim the mitzvah in the proper way. Because if wine is not drinkable, because it's too strong, that's not called yain, that's not called derech eres. Derech eres means you have to drink it to a degree where it's consumable in a pleasant way. So how much... Let's talk about real wine that is alcoholic. Okay, in time of Chazal, this if you ask the average person to explain what does it mean, what's going to sakai, so this is what they're going to say. They're going to say that in the time of Chazal, pure wine you get from the vineyard, when you do the golden, the entire process was not drinkable. And the only way you can consume yain is by diluting it with water. How much water would you dilute it with? Either different opinions. The Gemara, Rava had different. It's very clear in the Gemara there, everyone liked to dilute the wine differently. Mm-hmm. There's a Gemara, this person was blind, I remember who was blind, and then someone was there, and he gave him a drink. As, oh, this wine is the way this person dilutes the wine. I remember years ago, I was by this person, and he had a very unique formula to how much water he would add to the wine, and the wine that I'm drinking right now tastes like that person's dilution. Rebbe, guess what? I'm here. It's me. Ah, you see, I knew it. I knew it. I can tell it was you because I can tell from the wine. What about the wine? The degree to which it was diluted. So Rabelsky says, this is a really good Rabbi Rabelsky says, is that, let me before Rabelsky, go back to the time of the Gemara. There was a standard formula on how you dilute wine. And there's a machlokes. Either it's going to be three parts water and one part wine, or it's going to be two parts water and one part wine. Either, that was the ratio. Three or two. Either three parts water, two parts water, and one. That's the way they did in Talmud Chazal. The machlokes. Today, the earth no longer produces potent alcoholic beverages. And therefore, today, they do not dilute wine. Wine is served the way it is. Wine is produced the way it is. That's how it is. You don't go add water, adding water to the wine, you're going to ruin the wine. So today, it's like nishtana hateva. The average person will tell you when it comes to wine on Pesach d'Alekoyes, when it comes to Alekoyes, they'll tell you, Nishtane Hateva. There's a principle called Moizgenes Hakoyes. Time of Chazal, there was a potent potion of undrinkable liquid in the bottle, and someone comes, he pours it for you, and what he mainly does is, maybe you pour it yourself, but a person comes, royalty, he dilutes it for you with a proper professional dilution. Well, not professional, I'm sorry. Dilution. They diluted three parts, two parts, they diluted for you. Okay? Bizman azeh, no one is diluting wine because the earth is cursed and it doesn't produce potent beverages. So there's no need to dilute it. How we are mekayim the zecher l'cheirus of time of Chazal, someone pours the wine for you. Instead of you picking up the bottle and pouring the wine, someone picks up the bottle and pours it for you. What I just told you is the run-of-the-mill, where everyone will tell you about this thing called Moizgenes Hakoyes. What used to be, what is today, there's really no need, there's no such thing as dilution today, so in the Mekayim Halacha, we go and someone pours the wine for you, that's called Cheres. Rabelsky says, Gesundheit, you got it all wrong. Everything that I just told you now is completely wrong. Completely wrong. The earth is not cursed. The wine of today is identical. You can see right over here. It's identical to the wine of Chazal. Nothing has changed. It's identical. In fact, once wine reaches, this is scientific, he goes into the science, he doesn't really go into the detail, but I remember this years ago. Once wine reaches 12 or 13% alcohol, it cannot go further.
What are you talking about?
That's something that's not natural.
They still have today 20% wine.
You have to see how they're making it. They're doing something that's not natural. This is what he says.
That used to be common when I was
20% wine.
Yeah. In fact, my drivers used to buy. They called it Mad Dog Mogan David, They called it Mad Dog 2020.
Okay, I honestly am not denying this thing. I'm reading what he says over here. This is something we should probably easily Google.
You can still buy it in the liquor warehouse.
You have to know how they're doing it. How
they
are they making
20% wine.
How are they doing it? Maybe there's something, I don't know. I'm not coming to argue. Maybe, yeah.
What about sugar?
Whatever it is, it is.
Have a ton of wine.
What about sugar?
15, 16.
Sugar? No sugar, no additives. I'm talking about pure wine.
Well,
Belsky says.
Makes the alcohol more.
Maybe they're adding sugar. I don't know.
Don Feinstein says in his Agoda, he asked the winemaker, I'm reading this, an old one.
Okay.
He said, Shalta Yosha Yan Ramash Yan Bleed Suki Yesh Boy Kabar Chumash Menade Sukur. Yan Imatsuki Yesh Boy Orach Shlosha Ashiros Made Sukur. You have 3 times sugar. You have sugar in wine.
Natural sugar. Are they adding sugar?
Yes, says they add.
No, we're not adding. I'm talking about. I know nothing about wine. I'm reading to you what it says over here. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Let me just present you this idea. This he's famous for this. I remember hearing this from him. Let me just present you what he says. We're talking now about natural products. We're not talking about adding anything other than natural grapes. They're grapes. They ripen. You take the grapes, you press them, you collect the liquid, you put it away for a period of time, it ferments naturally, and it becomes alcoholic. I'm not discussing here adding any ingredient into the wine. Nothing but pure wine. He writes over here in his book that when wine ferments and becomes alcoholic, as time passes, the percentage of alcohol in the wine goes higher and higher. When it peaks at 13%, he's saying this is a scientific fact, at about 12-13%, it destroys itself. It's no longer productive. That's the point where it peaks. At that point, when if it gets more, it destroys itself. It self-destructs. What does it mean, self-destruct? Turns into vinegar? I don't know, or it becomes stable. In natural healthy wine will not become alcohol. The percentage of for its own natural fermentation will not peak more than 12-13%. This is what he says, and he says nothing has changed in the last 2,000 years.
Let me finish.
Idea that people said that in time of Chazal, the average wine was so potent, you couldn't drink it. It was like drinking syrup, concentrate, and you had to dilute the wine. He says, Nishkohegen, Nishkofleigen. The wine of those days was no different than you buy cream of lager. Okay, you go buy, you go buy 12%. 12 or 13%. That's the way it was. That with no additives. No additives. That's the way it was. Now, in those days, that was time of Chazal. What did you drink in the morning for breakfast? They didn't have coffee. What did you drink? A cup of wine. What did you drink when you get thirsty during the break in the morning, Kolo? What did you drink when you needed a break? A cup of wine. What did you drink for lunch? A cup of wine. What did you drink in the afternoon? Cup of wine. If you're going to be drinking 12% alcohol the entire day, you're not gonna survive. So what do people do? They take 12% wine and they dilute it. This was the flavor drink. There was no Coca-Cola. There was no root beer. There was no Dr. Brown's cream soda. They didn't have this stuff those days. It's hard to imagine. They didn't have orange juice. They didn't have apple juice, pomegranate juice. They didn't have all of these, I don't even know what they call these things, they have espressos and then this stuff and that, whatever. They didn't have these things. They only had one thing, yayin. But you can't drink 12, you can drink. You go buy today and go to the wine store, you buy 12%, delicious. Not a problem, it's very strong. It's gonna make you a little dizzy, might put you to sleep, might make you a little high. Well, if you know how to hold your liquor, if you train yourself to hold your liquor, good for you. But you're not going to do it for breakfast. You're not going to go drink 12%. You're not going to drink 12% because you're not going to be able to get through the day. So what do? They diluted it. They diluted regular 12% yayin. Can you drink the 12% yayin? Yes, you can. No problem. No problem whatsoever. You can drink it. It's not a problem. But it wasn't done. It was diluted. How much do you dilute? Well, here's the second thing that he disagrees. Even though the Gemara tells you there was a machlokes to be two amoraim, this one, Rav and Abaye maybe, this one diluted three parts water, one part wine. This one did two parts water, one part wine. That was the Gemara's illustrating their personal preference. But guess what? Everyone was different. Every single person had a different preference. How much do you dilute? They write on the Shidduch resume. How much does the boy dilute his wine? Everyone, it's like, what's your favorite color? What kind of hat do you wear? What kind of shoes do you wear? Well, how much when you have a cup of, when you have a drink, what is your preference in dilution? The air, four parts, three parts, two parts, one part. What is your personal preference in dilution? And it was a science. And I'm adding to this, that's the chayrus. The chayrus was, you have a waiter that does the dilution according to your liking. It was a skill. It was a skill of knowing how much, when, of the dilution. When we look at chayrus, the average person says, what's the chayrus? The chayrus is, I sit and I do nothing, and someone serves me. I have a waiter who goes and pours the thing for me. That's called chayrus. That's chayrus. You go. You're a lazy person. Take the bottle and pour it yourself. I'm chayrus. I need someone to go and baby feed me like I'm like an infant. That's chayrus. Excuse me, I can pour the wine myself. It's not such a big deal to pick up the bottle and to pour the wine into the cup. I can do it myself. That's not, the chayrus is the skill of diluting it just right. Because that takes effort, that takes chokhmah. There's a skill to knowing your customers. I can look at you right now and I can see where you're holding, I can see where your mind is holding, and I know that right now this is exactly how much. I can concentrate now. I'm busy talking to people. I'm busy saying the drasha. I'm doing something else, or I'm a little bit high, so I can't do it the proper way. So you do me the favor, you're a professional and you're my servant, so you go and dilute the wine for me. If you're drinking, don't drive. If you're drinking, don't dilute the wine. You're not going to dilute it properly. You need a professional servant to dilute it for you. Chayrus means you have a professional to do the dilution. The dilution, not to pour the bottle. Someone to pour the bottle, Rachmana Litzlan, if you can't pour your own wine. Rachmana Litzlan, you're such a lazy person that you need someone to go fill up your cup for you. I can fill up the cup myself. They didn't have in those days 2-liter bottles that are hard to pour. That's why you know all the fancy restaurants and hotels, they have the 1-liter thin bottles. Why do they have the 1-liter thin bottles? It's much more easy to pour. And you pour yourself. Instead of having a 2-liter, we have to take two hands and do it the right way. The chayrus is not the pouring. The chayrus is the dilution. Have a professional servant to do. Now, here's the chiddush. It says the Gemara that we don't really know the dilution. Everyone had a very unique, okay. A unique dilution. Some may have a lot of water and very little wine. However, the Gemara records two of the Amoraim. Two Amoraim, how they diluted their wine. And one of the Amoraim diluted three parts water, one part wine, and the other diluted two parts water, one part wine. Why did the Gemara illustrate these two particular Amoraim? Why didn't the Gemara just say, do whatever you want? Some people may have wanted five parts water and one part wine. The Gemara is telling us that for the night of Pesach, Chazal wanted it to be substantial. Substantial. It should be at least, it should not, don't dilute it too much. Even though ordinarily you may do so, but in honor of Pesach, there should be a little bit oomph in the wine. So Rabelsky says something shocking. He's there for what he learned from the Gemara. Nothing has changed in 2,000 years. The most that you're permitted to dilute, that it's called 100% kosher yayin, is 3%. The kedem kal. The kedem kal is 3%, 3.3. What does 3 mean? It means it's 3 parts water and 1 part wine. So the kedem kal is mozug, lechat chila. And Adam, he says, it's an incredible chiddush. According to this, that what about, no, at Pesach night, I want to be machmir. I want to have 12% yayin. The real deal. Guess what? The Gemara Shulchan Aruch says, it's a shail of even yoytzeh. It's too strong. The real wine, 12, when it reaches, the real wine, pure wine, it's too much. It's too intoxicating. That's not what we want for you on the Seder. It has to be diluted. A little bit. You have to dilute it a little. Mois gonna sakois. The night of the Seder demands that there be water in the kois. The highest amount, the natural highest amount is 12%. If you don't dilute it at all, you're not yoytze min hamufchar. I forgot the exact words of the Gemara. If you don't dilute the wine at all, you're not yoytze. You're yoytze b'diavad, not l'chatchila. Why? But it's strong, it's delicious. Who told you the night of the Seder to get drunk? Who told you you're supposed to have 12%? Nothing changed. The earth is not cursed. The earth produced the same product now that it produced 2,000 years ago. 2,000 years ago, sometimes people drank 12%, the real one, the way we drink. Sometimes they're on the way to work. They don't want to get pulled over by a cop for driving while intoxicated. So before for breakfast, they diluted their wine. Give me. You go in instead of going into Dunkin' Donuts, you buy some donuts, and you say, give me that wine. What dilution? 5-1, 4-1. That will be this amount of money. They have on the sign in Dunkin' Donuts, they have all the signs of the dilution. There's only one beverage. Lel Seder, Chazal said, Moizgines HaKos. Why? First of all, we don't want you to get drunk. 4 cups of 12 ounces will knock you out. Number 2, by having someone dilute it for you, it's chayrus. Get a professional. Bring in a professional diluter. And how much? The Gemara gives you two examples. One of the Amorim diluted 3-1, and the other diluted 2. So either 3 or 4%. 3 or 4% is the lowest amount of dilution, which is maybe it means the ideal, which means the proper wine to drink on the night of Pesach is 3% wine or 4% 3% alcohol or 4%. Everything I told you now is an incredible chiddush that no one says. Now, Belsky, he had his own path in this world. He says, this is a toast to say that the wine in the time of Chazal was not drinkable and it needed to be diluted. The wine in the time of Chazal was 12%, because scientifically, that is a healthy, natural percent of alcohol that develops. Study the science. Trust the science. Believe in the science. When you take grapes and you crush them and you produce yayin and you let it ferment, it's not going to go more than 12%. If it goes more than 12%, something is wrong. It's spoiling. It's becoming vinegar. Who knows what's happening to it? It's not healthy wine. Now, is that what we want you to drink? Well, some people, that's what they drink. When they go to a dinner, a state dinner, and you want to go sit down and rejoice, and you want to go drink some intoxicating beverages, people do other crazy things to stimulate their mind. They take drugs, and who knows what they do, all these different crazy things. Drinking a cup of wine, 4 cups of wine, that's 12%, that's not acceptable for the night of the Seder. How are you going to go and say them? How are you going to go get to the Seder? If you drink 4 cups of wine, that's 12%. So what do? You dilute it, just like you dilute it for breakfast. You dilute it for lunch. And when you do the dilution, don't do it yourself. Have someone do the dilution for you. But after they do the dilution, you can pour it yourself. Pouring is not the problem. It's the dilution. The dilution done by professional, that's their cheros. Then, and what is the, everyone did a different dilution. And what does the Gemara illustrate the lowest end for the night of Pesach? Rava. I think it was Rava, maybe there's another Rava, either 3-1. So that means if you start with 12%, you go down to either 3% alcohol or 4% alcohol. That is called Yayin. Chiddush, right? Okay, one more, we're out of time, one more Chiddush, one more Gemara. It's a Seba. Belsky says he studied this. He looked at tapestries of the Malchus, how to do, this is the way you do a Seder, the elevator. I was practicing on Shabbos. The way you do a Seder is, you sit on, you sit on a regular chair, you don't have to lean nothing, and you put your hand on your head, like this. You put your hand on your head, you're on the left side, like this. You put your hand on, your elbow on the table. Elbow on the table. Hand on your head, your left hand on your head. And you lean over, if you have a little bit of a recliner, it helps also. Hand on your head, like this. Your right hand is in total control. If you feel that you're not in control, you're doing something wrong. It's very relaxing.
If you're,
it doesn't matter, that's all Shabbat say, but it doesn't matter. You do it, your right hand. You hold the beverage in your right hand. You're in total control. Like this exactly the way I'm doing it is the way you do a Seder. Your right hand is totally free, total control. You're holding your head. You're holding your head with your hand, leaning on the left side, and your elbow is on the table. If you're not in control and feel comfortable, you're doing something wrong. Taking a recliner and going like this, and spilling it all over yourself, spilling all over yourself, and all over your friends, and all over the fancy tablecloth, that is not his favorite. And he says, go look, he says, he used to go to all these events, the OU sent them all over the world, and he says they have all these depictions of aristocracy in the Middle Ages, and this is exactly the way they are depicted at royal banquets. They're all sitting on a very fancy lounge chair. Their elbows are on the table. It says Shulchan Aruch, the Shulchan. Rashi says the Shulchan. What do you say? You don't need a table. You don't need a table. What are you need a table for? No, your elbow on the table. Your hand on your head. Relaxing. Your right hand is totally free. You're in total control.
That's the way we do our Seder this year.
And you drink and you relax. And you drink and you schmooze and you talk. That is it. And not only that, he created a very big splash because they had an ask, not so much before he died. They had an ask OU online. And they asked him this. And he illustrated and he sent shockwaves through the world. His disgrace, because no one ever heard him doing a say like this, and he insisted this is the correct way. Ad kidei kach, my dear Chaver, he actually took those pictures of the Ask OU and he published it over here at the show.
I saw him live.
Okay? This is the way. So we learned here, Rabbi Belsky, three chidushim lahalocha that no one else says.
You need two hands.
No, you're in two hands.
The wine.
You don't need to know, only one hand.
Get it all in.
No, no, that's what he's saying. No, you got to practice. I practice in Shabbos, the whole Shabbos. I practice here. You play just like your machol. You don't need two hands.
I do. Try it.
Bottom line, we learned today three chidushim that no one ever said before. La halacha. Yachatz, the shir of yayin, and haseba. This is mamash unique. You're not going to see this in any Haggadah. These chidushim lahalacha are Belsky Paskin lahalacha. When Yachat sold out, the share of 3% alcohol is taka, the yayin of the Gemara. Of the Gemara, not 12, and Adrabah, 12% would be no good. It's too much. You have to dilute it. And Haseba, the proper way to do Haseba. Good stuff, right?
Today's the art side of Miriam and Abia. Is Gadali, is Gadash, Miriam, Abu